Hey team, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Mind Time with Madison, a safe space where we meet with mental health experts, professional athletes, artists, entrepreneurs, and influencers to share stories of mental health experiences and offer you a place to grow and learn together. We're committed to providing conversations that help end the stigma around mental health. We hope you enjoy.
So I graduated from Duke with a bachelor's in psychology, and I'm currently pursuing a medical degree at Yale Med School. And today I will be hosting this interview with Dr. Yanki Yazgan. I'll quickly introduce him. He's a child psychiatrist from Turkey, also an adjunct professor at the Yale Child Studies Center, and professor of psychiatry in Marmara. So thank you for being here with us. And for those that missed our previous conversation, to be completely transparent, I am his daughter. He's my dad. But we will be completely professional today. So thank you for talking with me today. And before we start, I quickly want to go over team's mission. We try to equip friends and family members of those struggling with mental health conditions with the right information and resources necessary to take action and help their loved ones. So we are the support for the support, and we want to help people who help their loved ones. And we do this through our website, myteam.org, and our social media platform. So yeah, thank you for joining me again.
Yeah. Hello. So can we note for our Turkish audience, Türkiye'den izleyenler için bir küçük not. Bunu İngilizce yapıyoruz. Çünkü Amerika'daki bir kuruluş için yaptığımız için. So this was a note for our Turkish followers and viewers, because sometimes they complain about why we speak in English instead of Turkish while we are both Turkish. And so that's because to support my team, which is essentially a US-based NGO. But we are happy to support it from the other end of the world. And also we have similar enterprises in Turkey that we would love to connect between two countries. So for tonight, please bear with us. At least bear with my English. And so we'll try to do our best to reach both audiences in both countries.
Yeah, back in May, we had another conversation about mental health during COVID, and we wanted to do a follow-up and talk about the effects of social distancing and other aspects of COVID on our mental health. And we're currently in a different phase of the lockdown. Things are somewhat getting looser, but also we see that as they do, cases are increasing, so we might be going back into quarantine. What do you see any long-lasting effects of quarantine on people?
I think the one thing to remember is our major drive, as soon as we take our first step into life, is to connect with others. So the social isolation that came with the quarantine and the series of lockdowns has really affected our mental well-being, because it required a kind of a voluntary control of an inborn reflex to connect with others. However, I think we were luckier than the generations that have lived in past centuries, who had to stay at home due to similar reasons, because at least we had the online resources, and so we could maintain our relationships with others. So that isolation remained as an isolation, but it didn't lead to an insulation, which would be a very difficult situation, because otherwise, if we would we would be totally disconnected from other people. So that's an important factor that probably limited the maleficent effects of the quarantine. So, but still, there are some studies going on, and for example, I'm talking for a general population. Let's say the people who were already lonely, who most of these people are old people who have lost most of their relatives and friends, or people who didn't have access to internet and other kinds of communication devices and resources, they will have, I think they will have been affected much more than younger people, people who already had some social connections, and people with, access to technology.
Yeah.
So I think we should be alert about the older people, people with all existing social difficulties, and people with less access to internet and other devices.
Yeah, I've seen a study that was recently published in June of this year, that compared to the U.S. adults in 2019, like the beginning of 2019, the adults in the U.S. in April and May in 2020 were more than three times as likely to screen for depression and anxiety.
Oh.
And similarly, yeah, another study found that relative to the time before the lockdown, people reported more extensive feelings of sleepiness, depressive symptoms, headaches, other somatic symptoms, and fatigue. So what have you seen in your own private practice? I know that you're doing telemedicine. Have you seen an increase in some of those specific problems? What have you seen during this time?
First of all, you are quite updated about the literature. So thank you for sharing this, and bringing this to our attention. Actually, the epidemiological studies will show the real impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on our mental health, but the prevalence of depression and the incidence of new cases during this pandemic obviously have increased. I think that I have some data from not only from my own practice, but from my colleagues in different parts of Turkey and even in some parts of the US. The thing is, especially during the first 2 months of the pandemic, since people had very little access to clinics because they were discouraged, unless there was something necessary, emergency, but now, especially in June and in July, the anecdotal evidence is that the number of applications and the number of admissions is increasing, but most of these, for mental health cases, for younger people, and also for general psychiatric population. But there are two things. One is the already existing conditions, like chronic depression or other chronic mental health conditions like schizophrenia or bipolar problems. There wasn't a particular rise in the severity of symptomatology, because although the stress level was high, for most people, being together with family members was somewhat protective, especially for more severe conditions, mm-hmm. because We know that people who have closer ties with the community or with the family, and if they have severe conditions like psychosis, the course of the illness may be in a better prognostic direction. So, however, the kind of new cases were among the younger people who were bored, mm-hmm. who were under some kind of new type of pressure, like online schooling, mm-hmm. and also the kind of a new home environment where the parents were at home but were still unavailable because they were overworked by remote working conditions. I mean, it didn't mean that the parents stayed at home, but it didn't mean that they were spending more time with their kids and they were paying more attention to their kids. They were busy and they were working around the clock. They should have to be available and accessible around the clock.
Yeah, I read somewhere someone said working from home isn't working from home. It's working while trying to live at home. So yes, parents are having a really difficult time.
So this had its toll on families, couples, and in some children with already existing either neurodevelopmental conditions or some sort of mental issues like anxiety or depression or oppositional defiant disorder and these sorts of problems. For example, this overworking issue of the parents have, I don't know the situation in the US, but we just completed a study in a group of education professionals in Turkey, and especially among private teachers, private school teachers, I'm sorry, they report that the time that they had to dedicate to work was doubled during the time of pandemic because of the remote learning, because they had to generate videos or spend extra time for getting ready for the school, etc. The parents who were also teachers had really, they reported great difficulty. And the same applies to health professionals. Mm-hmm. And another study was published from Turkey in Psychiatry Research from different cities. And it also shows that especially the female health professionals have been affected deeply because of the demands of the work and also demands of home. And it's particularly true for nurses. I think the nurses in Turkey probably had the greatest share from the pandemic in terms of their quality of life and mental well-being.
Yeah, it's a very tough time and we don't know when it's going to get better. I heard that you mentioned boredom as one of the big problems that children are facing right now. And for children and teens, being away from friends and other social environments and activities can result in boredom. And this is true for us adults as well, and it can lead to other mental health problems. But I feel like in the age of Instagram, Facebook, and Netflix, and everything at the tip of our fingers, we've forgotten what it means to be bored. What are the consequences of being bored? Can it be a positive thing? And how can children and teens cope with boredom? And how can parents deal with their children while they're bored?
So I think it's interesting for you to ask me that question, because I remember you as a younger kid, especially in places where we took you and your brother to, vacation places where you really get bored. You got bored and where there was nothing around to do, and you and your brother had to find your ways of entertaining yourself by collecting pebbles or just making paintings on the floor, or just creating games. So I think boredom is, let's first focus on boredom, then talk about boredom associated with this quarantine. Boredom is sometimes maybe an opportunity for creativity, because especially for kids, I think it's very common for kids almost every time to complain about not being able to find entertaining enough, because kids usually need a lot of stimulation to keep themselves going. That's part of the brain physiology at a younger age. And so you need novelty and to really activate the arousal and vigilance. And so boredom is the monotony in the environment. And so if the environment is not stimulating enough, so kids find ways of making that environment more stimulating. So that's one thing. I think in many houses that I had the chance to hear about, kids, when they got bored, they had laptops or iPads and iPhones and other kind of smartphones to get out of this boredom by doing another monotonous activity. I think the amount of screen time increased significantly. That's probably that was the cost of the boredom. And since the parents were over busy, they couldn't find another way of diverting them to some sort of finding activities that would keep themselves out of boredom. So I think increased screen time is the consequence of that boredom. Increased screen time is not necessarily a pathological or pathogenic situation, but the thing is it increases the it stimulates the nonverbal processing aspects of the brain, which in childhood is already developing itself fine. But for many kids, especially the language-based learning systems require extra stimulation in order to develop. So the screen exposure is interfering with the development of language-based systems in the brain and also leading to inattention and distractibility in many children. So I think many parents should really be aware of this excessive use of screens during the pandemic. So that's my take.
I get that, you know, the iPhone has a screen time alert, and I keep seeing my screen time increasing every day, which is really upsetting.
Mine increased too. I mean, it's perhaps inevitable, but you know, the parents should really keep an eye on the kind of activity the kids do on the internet or using screens, because most of it is, I mean, not every activity should be of some benefit. Some certain things can be done for nothing, just for the fun of it. But I think even the most beneficial, like, let's say, is reading Shakespeare a good activity? Yes. But if you read Shakespeare for 8 hours, you know, and remaining indoors, not even getting out of your bed, that's not good, because it's excessive.
Yeah. That's those are really good insights. I'm gonna be mindful of how quickly time is going, and I want to pivot to a similar but different topic. from our followers, we've had many requests about learning more about situational depression. For those that don't necessarily know what this is, situational depression occurs when we develop more exaggerated emotions than what is considered normal in response to a stressful event. And I think we could call this time COVID and social distancing and quarantining an ongoing stressful event. In your opinion, how can individuals that are feeling these intense emotions cope? And I think people also wonder if these feelings will disappear once the stressor is out of the picture.
First of all, if a stressor causes a particular mental condition or a problem, the mental problem doesn't vanish or disappear when the stress is removed. It's like, you know, if you fell off a tree and break your arm, as it happened to you when you were a kid. Not, you weren't on a tree, but you were riding a bicycle. I remember that day. But so if I put you back on the bicycle or on the branch of the tree and remove the stress, your arm doesn't get better. So the harm is done. And so we need to do extra things. Of course, I think it's very important to find ways of blocking the impact of stress any further. And I hope the stress that came with the pandemic will go away in a year or so. It may be too long for many, but I'm just making a pessimistic estimate. And we have done not too bad until now. As far as I can see, people are holding tight. However, we know that depression in general is a response to loss or the threat of a loss. That means most of the depressed feelings that arose during this pandemic is associated with feelings of loss, like as we talked last time, like missed opportunities because of, you know, like trips that were not taken, the graduation parties that were missed, or exams that had to be taken online instead of in person, you know, that otherwise we would be more successful or things like that. You know, so many things that were missed. These are all, these can be seen as losses. So depression is a response, the mind's response to loss. And a loss cannot be reconstituted, you know, like, but our coping strategies help us to deal with the impact of the loss, first recognizing the impact of the sadness and that comes with the loss. What makes things better? Hoping that things will get better, the belief that things will get better soon, is helping many people to cope with situational depression. By situational depression, I think many people mean that a depression that's caused by the current situation and not because we are not able to adjust our mood to the demands of the novel situation that came as a surprise. So as we adapt to the changing circumstances due to the pandemic, our response style changes, and it's as it gets more adaptive, depression goes away. However, the depression is sometimes helpful if it's at a mild level. I don't mean depression is a good thing, but if it's at a mild level, it allows us to slow down and sometimes to pause and recollect ourselves and make a plan and get out of this particular difficult situation. But as depression gets more severe, it doesn't allow us to make plans, to have a hope, and to go forward. So that's where the decision to whether to treat or not comes. So the symptoms of depression, whether it's situational or chronic, if they are severe enough to limit one's functioning, it warrants treatment, and this treatment may be either through psychotherapy or pharmacotherapy, but it has to be taken seriously. I mean, situational doesn't mean non-serious. We don't see it. Of course, a reaction to an abnormal situation cannot be normal. So we are in an abnormal situation and our response will be abnormal. But if that abnormal situation is interfering with our development and our functioning, so we have to interfere.
Yeah. And you did mention therapy or using medications. And I feel like a lot of people look at taking medications for mental health problems as like a lifetime verdict. And I personally believe that sometimes medications can be, can help to break a negative cycle of distress, but also can be needed for a really long time. And I feel like the stigma around mental illness has created this feeling of shame and embarrassment about taking medications, as if once you start taking meds, you become officially ill. It might have to do with the fact that mental illness doesn't show physically. I mean, it can have physical symptoms like tiredness or other somatic symptoms, but it's not like a rash or a bleeding cut. So people have this these negative thoughts about medications. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's I think we can have a long discussion on that. First of all, most of the mental conditions, including depression, anxiety, or bipolar disorder, or autism, or schizophrenia, all of these issues have an impact on a person's involvement with the community and fulfillment of his or her responsibilities. So that's why it's not only an individual issue, but it has social consequences. So that's why in many instances it causes a significant social impairment. So that's another consequence of having a problem with a social impairment is being excluded from the society. So, you know, getting some therapy or being on medications can easily be viewed as a sign of weakness, not being able to be part of the society any longer. And that then becomes a stigma for exclusion. So, and we know that exclusion by any reason, I mean, it's not only people are not excluded only for a change in their mental condition, you know, like as in the US, racism is one of the major reasons. Gender is another reason. So there are so many reasons for exclusion, but mental conditions, changes in mental health, mental illness, it's frightening for people because they are afraid of being left out of the society. So taking medication may be seen as a strong sign of having a mental condition, as if it's a stronger sign than just a talking treatment, etc. So that's why many people would not disclose that they are on medication, or they would see using medication for longer times as a sign of weakness. That's a misconception, and that's not the case. But you know, there's a social issue. As a psychiatrist, my major concern here is that stigmatization may cause people not to receive treatment that would improve their condition and that would restore their functioning. So that's the paradox. So I think medication, mental illness, psychotherapy, all these issues and the people's prejudice toward anything psychological or psychiatric is associated with stigma. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic probably will bring an awareness of mental health, because so many of us have been affected. So many of us who have never thought of having a mental condition are now having difficulties in regulating our emotions, controlling our thoughts, or maintaining our hopes about future. And so we will be more understanding to mental well-being and how easily one's mental balance, mental health can be disturbed.
Yeah.
That happened in Turkey during the earthquake in 1999, when you were 4 years old. So there was this big earthquake, and that changed the way people viewed mental illness and mental well-being, because so many people were traumatized. Mm-hmm. Millions of people were traumatized and their mental conditions were so they had to receive psychotherapy, pharmacotherapy, and people's view changed. So I believe stigma is a social issue, and it's not a medical issue. It's a social judgment about a medical situation, like depression, for example. But, movements like my team or other sort of mental health movements in Turkey, in the US, in Europe, or in other parts of the world are changing the picture and helping people to gain control over their own mental well-being, not being afraid of this, and encouraging them to fight with the stigma.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's very important to, one, reduce the stigma, but also inform people about mental well-being and mental health. A quick plug, as team, we also have a COVID mental health website that is specifically targeted to the difficulties people might be experiencing during COVID.
How can people access to your website? Would you talk more about my team? So even, you know, our Turkish viewers with knowledge of English language can access, and our American viewers can also.
Yeah. So thank you. Madison just sent the. COVID website. That is our COVID website. Then we also have myteam.org, which is our more general mental health, how to support the support website, information about several different mental illnesses. You can go ahead and apparently I can pin something. You can go ahead and follow us on Instagram.
You can pin the comment with the link. You can do something.
I just did.
Can you do that? No.
Yeah, I did.
You did it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Sorry.
No worries. If you go ahead and follow this Instagram account, we post little things from our websites as well. And we also have all the information about our websites on there. But thank you for bringing that to attention.
Yeah, I think it's very important, you know, like, because I think the kind of organizations like my team and many others that we may not be even aware of. These are social movements that provide people a group to connect with, and we deal with the life's uncertainties and difficulties together with other people. We need companions, people mm-hmm. to walk together. So I think we need that. That's a wonderful organization, and I'm proud that you're part of that with your friends who founded that organization, and I'm happy to join you as much as possible.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be a part of it as well.
And I hope we'll be able to, mobilize people in Turkey, you know, some medical students or people with mental conditions that coming together. There are some organizations in Turkey too, of course, many of, but I think helping people who help people with mental health issues is important too. Caring for carers kind of thing. I think that became important during even the COVID-19 thing, because carers are exhausted and they just get out of their own resources. And so they need to be supported and advised about how to support their loved ones struggling with mental health conditions. So I think that's a nice the way of approaching and supporting people.
Yeah, similar to medical professionals dealing with COVID patients right now. They need a lot of mental health support as well.
Another thing which we did. We did a survey, and I'm not ready to talk about it, but so teachers and doctors are doctors and nurses and other health professionals are the groups that I'm particularly interested in, because health and education professionals provide a huge support to people during difficult times, and they are critical in our survival, actually, intellectual and physical survival. So they have been affected deeply. They have overworked. They have been overloaded, and they haven't been supported enough. I mean, of course, we doctors received a lot of applauses during the first few months, or got some financial compensation. But the kind of fight they gave, the doctors and other health professionals, I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to describe. I mean, we lost many lives, and we it was a difficult time. I hope the pandemic will be controlled during the next couple of months, and we'll have time to focus on how to heal the wounds inflicted by this pandemic, mental, physical, societal.
Yeah, so now that we're talking about loss, I feel like a lot of people have this feeling of loss of 2020 as a whole year. A lot of people feel like they have completely lost this entire year and are hopeless for the rest of 2020. And I personally think that is very pessimistic, but what can people do to avoid giving up during the rest of the pandemic?
We have 5.5 months until the end of the year. We are almost, I think it's very pessimistic to think that, 2020 is gone. And so many things to do, so many books to read, so many things to write, so many friends to talk to. I think this is an oversimplistic way of seeing how the year has ended. I mean, of course, in terms of the pandemic and the control of the infection, we have a lot of way to go. But I think that fight with the pandemic and the COVID-19 itself is the story itself. Is there a time that people do not have difficulties? I mean, the only thing is the world came to a halt for a time period, and we are losing so many things. Yeah. But on the other hand, I don't see any reason to say that, okay, the year has ended, let's look at 2021. I mean, that's for financial people or others, but, you know, every day is a day. So here we are talking to each other, and there are millions of people doing the same. Mm-hmm. So life is going on.
That's true. And school will be starting soon, which is crazy. And people have no idea what to expect. And I don't know how this hybrid online schooling schedule will affect teens and their children's behaviors at home. But hopefully they'll get to at least interact with their friends. How can adults help their teens help their social and emotional learning while they're away from this facilitating environment?
Yeah, sorry, I just had to move places because I'm running out of battery. So can you ask your mom to bring me a battery?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So this is our household. So let's see. Going back to school, we just completed a survey among teachers and school principals in Turkey. You know, the biggest concern is how to help kids keep social distancing and wear a mask. 70% of the school professionals have that concern. So that's one thing. Sorry about that. Very unprofessional, but so.
Technical problems.
Okay. So. Let me see. Okay.
We have a jingle.
Ah, right there. We have time.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the second concern after the mask wearing masks and social distancing is whether how are we going to be able to keep kids' attention? Mm-hmm. And how will we help them resist the distractions, especially, you know, with all this new order and the, you know, the stress that comes with going back to school, and you know, the fear of getting infected. So that's a big concern. I think there will be some solutions for finding a way to avoid infections and to maintain a school system with smaller classroom sizes, employing new teachers, so to increase the teacher-student ratio, and also some hybrid systems combining online and offline in-person methods. But and the other thing is, again, teachers and principals are thinking about, you know, the kind of anxiety of the parents mm-hmm. about kids. So there are so many issues about going back to school. In Israel, they opened schools early in June, as if I'm not wrong. And with the increase in number of cases, they had to close down. They had to take a step back. And I think there is no one to blame for these things, because there are some experimentations going on about how to make this happen. Because kids need to be at school with their friends. I think that's an important aim. But how can we make it possible safely? So that's a question where science will work on. You know, you're going back to school and the medical school, and they're opening, and they will do tests, and they will do smaller classrooms, some online classes. So we'll find solutions. I think probably some classes will be missed, but I don't think a big harm will be done.
Yeah. I know we said that we would talk for half an hour, but an hour has almost.
So they're about to, we're about to be shut down?
So I'm just going to ask you my last question, which is, so right now everyone's saying something different about vaccines. We don't know when this is going to be under control. How can we deal with not knowing, and how can we deal with uncertainty during this time?
So that's a philosophical question, actually.
You can give me like 2 minutes.
So we learn. We learn how to deal with uncertainty. And life is about this. You know, we learn to tolerate the ambiguity and the frustration that comes with uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And we focus on what we know about and what we are able to do at the moment. And this helps a lot with not knowing about what will come next. We never know about what will come next. Mm-hmm. The only thing is there are now billions of people who came to this realization at the same time, at the same moment. And now it's a big, big question. But this big question is always in our minds, has always been in our minds, but we don't think about it. So now the COVID pandemic is putting a pressure on us and making us think that, you know, you don't know what is next. We try to, not only we try to know what is next, but by using science, by using the accumulated wisdom of humanity, not only to know, but also to determine what is next. So developing a vaccine, developing strategies to control the infection. This is what humans can do, and we are able to do that. So this is how we deal how we deal with we are very amateur. Look at this light and the lighting but okay, anyway. So thank you for it was a good broadcast. Thanks for wonderful questions and comments and helping me through this.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your support for team. And again, for those still on the call or the Instagram live.
Oh, so many people stayed on the call. And are your friends Madison, Mackenzie, Isa from Miami, Luis Martinez, and so many people from Turkey too.
We just were the support for the support. Madison, I pinned her comments. That's our COVID mental health website. And if you're interested in learning more about how to take care of yourself during this time or take care of others during this time, you can go ahead and look, go into that website. And thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll meet at another conversation again on the My Team Instagram account.
And I promise our Turkish viewers and audience that I will do a follow-up in Turkish too.
Thank you everyone for listening, and have a good day if you're in the US. Have a good night if you're in Turkey.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for watching this episode of Mind Time with Madison. Don't forget to check us out on Instagram at myteam.social and on our website at www.myteam.org. See you next time.